Today, my guests and I are going to talk about what happens in therapy and what happens in sex therapy. So if you've ever been curious about either of those, I think you'll really enjoy today's episode. Hi there and welcome. I'm your host, Dr. Heather England. I wear lots of hats as a coach, psychotherapist, and sex therapist. I want to empower you to embrace your relationships and feel really good about your sex life. Before I start, if you have topics or questions about relationships or sex that you want me to answer on the podcast, please consider clicking the link in the show notes and submitting your request. You can do this anonymously. I'm so excited about today's episode, so let's jump right in. Today, I'm welcoming Beverly Rouse. She's a licensed clinical professional counselor and an executive coach. Bev and I were classmates at West Point years ago, and we have enjoyed also hanging out on girls' trips. So I know Beverly from school and from a personal standpoint, and we've had some really good conversations about our professional lives. She has a very impressive background, and I want to roll right into her bio, which I'm going to read because it's pretty deep. Bev owns Empowering Insight, a clinical therapy and coaching practice. She's also a requirements analyst for the Department of Defense in the Defense Language and National Security Education Office. She graduated from the United States Military Academy at West Point in the fifth class, which included women. And she served for 29 years in the Army before retiring as a lieutenant colonel. That is so cool. Bev is a lifelong learner, which I love, and she's earned multiple graduate degrees and also a certificate in sexual health from the University of Michigan. She's a certified coach, and she's working towards certification as a sex therapist. She's a wife, mom, grandmother, and a super athlete. She's an avid reader and knitter, and she's passionate about tennis, riding her Peloton, and competing in triathlons. So welcome, Bev. That's such an impressive resume. Oh my gosh, you have done so much.
It sounds like a lot, doesn't it?
But it is a lot, but you're a busy person with a lot of energy.
Yes, I am.
Can you help the listeners to understand a little about your journey? Like I think you wear a lot of hats in your life. You do a lot of things. So can you kind of walk people through your journey through life so they feel like they get to know the real you a little more than just the bio?
Thank you so much for having me. Number one, I credit you with my becoming a sex therapist because you gave me the recommendation to go to Michigan. About me, it does sound like a lot, but I say my military career was my first career. And when that even was kind of a roller coaster thing because I ended up going into the reserves, and the reserves gave me the freedom to learn a little bit more about what the world looks like outside of the military. Being a reservist also gave me the experience of becoming an entrepreneur. But while I was in the reserves, I ended up deploying to Iraq, and I was away from my family for about 15 months. That definitely put a major strain on our family. So I ended up in therapy. We had marriage counseling, cause our marriage did not last the deployment. And then my son was in counseling. So throughout all of that, ended up staying on active duty, and I was able to support my family in the midst of getting a divorce and having a child who was kind of lost for a minute. And therapy actually helped me get through it. So I was like, I would love to help someone else manage that process and potentially maybe not be in a situation I found myself in, being unable to communicate with my husband and all that goes with trying to keep a relationship together and keeping your sanity when your kids are all over the place, right? That's when I, you know, went to graduate school to become a therapist. Actually, I went to do a PhD program, but realized that I did not like the subject I was studying. So switched over to counseling, which was much more something that was up my alley and just, you know, had some really good opportunities. My last year of active duty, my boss, Colonel, asked me what I needed. And I said, hey, I need a day off a week. So I was like, I had to get my internship done. And so I had to leave. So he was like, okay, just take one day of leave a week, not a Friday or a Monday. No problem. So I just took off one Thursday every week and got my internship hours done so I could at least get my degree and retire in the same year. So I did that.
Okay, wait.
And I ended up, yeah.
We have to back up here for a sec because holy cow. So for many people that really don't know much about the military, if I understand you correctly, you're deployed in Iraq, okay? Mm-hmm. And your marriage has fallen apart while you're mm-hmm. gone that year.
Yes.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
That had to be incredibly stressful.
It was. Our chaplain actually said to us, if your marriage is good, you're going to struggle. If your marriage is struggling, you're going to struggle. So, you know, I didn't realize how much of a challenge it was going to be the mother who is deployed. I didn't realize how much it was going to affect me as well, because, you know, if you're really not communicating well, and then you all the way across the country, across the continent from someone, and your time schedule's off and you're not going to see them for 6 months. And then there are things going on with your kids. And it was just a lot. It was a lot. And
I can't imagine. I can't imagine the tug on your heart too, as a mom, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Thinking about your son. And
I will say this. I had a community of friends and family who kept my kids. I have an amazing bond with these families today. And I'm not going to say just women, it's women, but it was the family unit. Like if my son needed to go down the street, he could go down the street and he could hang out with the Wades, or he could hang out with the Eves, or, you know, my friend Felicia was cooking dinner every Friday night. And so they could go down there, and I had a rotation amongst my friends, like, okay, who's going to have them this weekend and who's going to have them this weekend. So I made up a little calendar of people who they knew, their friends, families came through. Like my youngest son, his best friend is a young lady named Sydney, and her mom, Maureen. They, like, if Matthew was going through whatever, it's like, oh, come on over here, Matt, you know, and they are still friends to this day. My kids still have friends to this day who were their friends when I deployed. And I am so thankful for that community that I was able to build for them.
Yeah, that's incredible. It also sounds like you weren't afraid to ask for help in that process and to accept help.
Well, part of that is how I grew up. Now, I will say, because it was for my children, I had no problem asking for help.
Ah, got it.
I had a challenge asking for help for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came
back
from that—
Isn't that the truth, right?
Yes. Absolutely. And it took my mom to take me aside, because my youngest son was clingy after I came back. So, you know, you're gone for 15 months.
Yeah.
And it affects your children differently. My youngest, he was just very clingy. And after the experiences in Iraq, I was not. Like, that was very awkward for me. And so my mom said, she pulled me aside one day and she's like, I noticed you pulling away from Matt whenever he tries to get close to you. And I said, I'm not doing that. And my mom's like, yes, you are.
Wow.
You need to go talk to somebody. You need to get some help.
Wow.
Hence my beginning of my therapy journey. Because what I was so resistant to therapy when I came back from deployment. Because as a reservist, when you come back from deployment, they ask you, do you need to talk to somebody, right? But you know, if you say yes, that means you're going to be away much longer. That means the process for you to return to your family is that much longer. And I, at least back then it did. I don't know what it looks like today, but back then it did. And so I was like, yeah, I'm fine. I don't need to talk to anybody. And I just, you know, then it was a big stigma. Therapy was a big stigma in the military, especially because somebody like me had a clearance. I was an intel person. And so, There was some things that went on that came, you know, just you don't want to go to therapy because then they're going to take your clearance away and all this other stuff. It was a long journey for me to learn how to ask for help.
Yeah. And kudos to your mom for not being afraid to kind of get in your business. And in a way, that was your mom showing her love for you, right? Because she saw what was going on.
So, and was willing to confront me about it.
Yeah, because you could have had a different reaction that could have impacted your relationship in a negative way.
Well, yeah, and like I think it did in the fact that my ex-husband mentioned it, and I was just like, "Yeah, you're full of shit," and whatever. But
usually ex-husbands are full of shit, or ex-wives,
or ex-wives.
Sorry,
but yeah. So I mean. You know, but that was also a factor as far as our communication. So yeah. that just, you know, showed up there.
Mm. The other thing I think it's important for listeners that aren't familiar with the military is you use the word leave. Well, leave is vacation. So essentially your boss, right, let you take off one day a week of vacation that you had earned. To do your master's degree in counseling.
Absolutely.
And that enabled you to get through it.
Yes. It enabled me to meet the requirements for the to get my master's. So yes.
Wow.
Yeah, I was blessed. I swear I am the learning how to ask for help has helped me along this entire journey. To say that, you know, hey, I need this, and not being scared to let people know that there's something that I may need from them, or scared of the no, right? We all get scared of, oh, they're just going to tell me no. Well, that's the worst that could happen, but they could tell me yes.
Right. But you're spot on, because most people fear that rejection, that, oh, they're going to say no. And the other thing is, I think it takes a lot of vulnerability to ask for help, because you're admitting I can't do it all.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, when you're reading my bio and it says, oh, it sounds like a lot. I could not have done half the things I did without the support that I have. Like, my current husband is very supportive of my craziness, as he calls it. He's like, I really don't want to be up in your head sometimes.
I love that.
You know, when I started the triathlon journey, he was just like, don't drink all that Kool-Aid. I drink it all. So, but I would not be able to do what I'm doing without the support that I have, family and friends. So I think it's important to build that.
Right. Those support systems really do improve the quality of our lives overall. And it takes intentional work to build those support systems. They don't just happen.
Yeah, it does. It does. But, you know, it's worth it.
Yeah, no, totally worth it. Yeah. So let's keep rolling on your story, because you became a therapist while you were still working a full-time job. Well, you were in the Army. Then you retired and you're working for the Department of Defense. And you're doing like two jobs. You're a therapist and you're working at the Department of Defense. And then you're a therapist and you're seeing clients, and then you decided, oh, I'm going to become a sex therapist. That sounds super cool. So you started on that journey, and somewhere along the way, you became an executive coach too. My head is like spinning, like all these careers.
It is. It's a lot, but I am very fortunate in that I am able to compartmentalize. It's definitely less stress on me that I work from my home. And I don't see any more than three clients a night, because I don't think it's fair to my clients if I'm that tired. And, you know, one of the negative parts about being deployed and going to Iraq is that I have diagnosed with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. And part of that is that I just don't sleep very well. So that's why I can work out in the morning, because I just get up in the morning and work out. But that's another way of my taking care of myself, too.
Well, I really admire how you balance your life so well. So what I think would be really helpful is I'd like to go into three things. One is I would love for you to help people understand. And since I'm a therapist and a sex therapist, you know, we can kind of banter back and forth about this. You know, what is therapy? When do you know you need to go to therapy? How is therapy helpful? How is that different from coaching? And then what is sex therapy? You know, people have lots of misbeliefs about what happens in sex therapy, right? Yeah, lots of stories there. But, you know, how do you know you need sex therapy? What does a sex therapist do? And then the third thing I would love for you to touch on is you do a masterful job of self-care, which I think is just a real testimony to your resilience and all the things you've gone through in life. You have figured out what you need in order to really take care of yourself. And I think so often as women, we're so busy taking care of everybody else around us that we put ourselves last and we don't take care of ourselves like we really should. And taking care of yourself is more than, oh, I'm going to take a bath. Like it's a lot of other activities. So when we talk self-care, we're really talking, to me, it's almost like lifestyle. It's how you choose to organize your life so that you can take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm. And your first question, we'll do therapy.
Therapy.
When do you know you need it? I think the beauty of therapy is that you get to go and sit down with somebody whose sole job it is to listen to you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Same for a coach. A coach's job is to listen to you. But what you get with a therapist is somebody who has knowledge of different tools and techniques to kind of help you move from point A to point Z, right? So instead of saying, oh, I'm going to do it all by myself, or I'm going to read up on it, the therapist can kind of guide you, because maybe you are reading a self-help book and the self-help book doesn't make sense to you. The therapist can help the self-help book make sense, or can guide you to a different one that's better for you without you having to do all of that. So I would say that a therapist is also impartial. And so if you need someone to listen to what's going on in your life, that is not going to judge you.
Mm-hmm.
That is the beauty of therapy, is that your therapist is obligated by law, by our ethical commitment, not to share your business, because you share with family and friends, somebody gonna tell. But, you know, we're obligated not to share your business, but we're also there to be non-judgmental partners with you in your healing journey. You don't have to be in therapy for the rest of your life. You can go to a therapist. You know, we ask people to give us 3 months.
So I just want to add a little to what you're saying, to tag along to the impartialness, that kind of unconditional support we give. I think we validate our clients, right?
Yes.
So if they're in a really difficult spot, therapists validate, oh yeah, that sounds really rough. I can't imagine what it's like for you to have to be going through this. And just that validation can make people realize, oh, it's not me. Like I am okay, right? It helps people feel much better about themselves. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I think that therapists, that I think we have to really understand about therapy, is that there's two main things that influence whether or not therapy is going to be successful. And the first is just the relationship that the client and the therapist have with one another. Because if you're going to share your stuff with somebody, you've got to have a good connection. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to open up your soul and sit on someone's couch and cry, which when I went to therapy was always, that was the hurdle for me. Can I cry in front of this person? Like, can I sit there and let it all out? But you've got to feel connected enough to them to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And then the other piece is you have to be motivated to change. So when you go to therapy, you have to want to change. You have to want to have your life be different, or otherwise you're not going to implement the things that you talk about with a therapist. If the therapist is teaching you skills and you don't leave that office and work on them, and you just expect to get better from that session you have each week or every other week, you're going to make really slow progress.
Right.
You have to want to have your life be different.
Yes, you do have to want to have your life be different, but I think sometimes you may not know what that looks like.
Right.
And the therapist is there to help you to kind of figure that out for yourself.
I think therapists are guides too. Like, I think they guide you. I think they help you to gain insight. You know, just based on your expertise of what you know as a therapist, you're trying to get clients to a point where they have that aha moment. Absolutely. Oh, well, no wonder I get upset when my partner, you know, doesn't call me when he's going to go out with friends at night. And because it makes me feel like I'm not important. And that's a trigger for me because that's how I felt growing up. Like I didn't matter. Right. There's just ahas people have in the therapy process that it gives them insight about how things impact them. And so then they can respond differently. I always feel like people have to understand their internal experience. They have to be able to recognize what's going on inside of me. Why am I getting upset? What's causing this feeling? What's causing my thoughts? Are my thoughts, are these thoughts that are accurate thoughts? Or are these thoughts driven by maybe some incorrect assumptions that are making me think something that's really a false narrative about what's going on?
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, you're absolutely correct. And I think that's the challenge, right? So therapy helps you do the deep dive. That's what I call it. Coaching is like the surface dive. So the therapist forces you to dig down into this happened to me in childhood. This may have been a repetitive thing, things like that. When you go talk to a coach, the coach is like, okay, you've set some goals. These are some things you're working on. What's your motivation for that? And accountability partner. Whereas your therapist is like, okay, this is something that triggers you. This is what we're working on. How can you continue to move forward in this space knowing that? And here's some skills that we are going to teach you to kind of get you to continue moving forward.
That's a great delineation because you see so many people marketing themselves as life coaches, you know, nowadays, and you don't know what their training is really for the most part.
No, right. And so at least with a therapist, you do know that we're trained, or somebody who has training as a coach has training. So I would just say, you know, to your audience, if you're looking for someone that is a therapist, verify their credentials. And you can go to your state licensing board to verify that your therapist has a license. And also not to be scared to say no. Like, you know, you're interviewing your therapist, really, to say, okay, match. Do we have the same energy? Like, I may have too much energy for somebody. Like, you know, and that's okay. You know, many of us know that our clients, you got to like something about your therapist, you know, because yes, we're going to challenge you, but we're also there to make sure that, you know, you're moving in a direction that you stated you wanted to move, when you first came. So, but you know, to your audience, don't be scared to say no, or to tell yourself, this person's not my person. And that's okay. But also, don't limit yourself, because I've had people like, oh, I want a therapist that looks like me. It's from my culture or whatever. Sometimes you may need somebody who's outside of your culture or who doesn't look like you, but has the energy that you need to help you to heal. That's what you're looking for. You're looking for energy. I look for energy. And, you know, my therapist, what was a white lady from Arkansas, you know, but I didn't need to, she didn't need to be from the city. She didn't look like me. I don't even know if that was an option, but she got me. I felt when I first went in her office, she got me. And when I say she got me, like you said, can I cry in front of this person? Oh, for me, me to cry in front of you, like, I'm a crier anyway. Like, if mm-hmm. it's a bad, sad movie, I'm going to cry. But when it comes to me, my stuff, mm-mm. to share my stuff.
I'm with you. Yeah. And I think a lot of people are like that. And I think a lot of people are scared of therapy because, oh, I might cry. But it's okay. We always have lots of tissues.
We do.
And for good reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's roll into sex therapy.
So sex therapy, I actually got my degree at Liberty University, which if you know, it's a very fundamental Christian university. But I had a class in human sexuality that we had to take. Most of the course was online. Most of the classes were online, but we had to take a certain number of classes in person. And this class was in person. And my professor in that class was so raw and so honest about challenges with sex and church and amongst people in different religions. And oh my God, I was like, I need to know more about this. I need to learn more. But it still took me about 5 years being into therapy before I realized that, oh my goodness, I am dealing with a lot of different challenges with regard to sex, sexuality, like how do I talk to my clients about it? How do I bring it up? You know, you're counseling couples and we do a lot of surface stuff and just, you know, so getting the additional certification for sex therapy actually helped me to be much more comfortable talking to my clients, educating my clients, being more empathetic with clients. Learning more about, you know, because I think people think sex and it's always heterosexual, it's vanilla, it's this. And it's like, oh my God, there's so much more out there. And it actually opened my mind up to just how we can support different communities with issues around sex, education. How can we help children be safer? How can we talk more about consent? All of those things that just are part of what a sex therapist offers fascinated me. And I am so glad I took that deep dive because it was scary at first. Definitely was scary. But it is definitely something that I am glad I conquered a fear about because I think it has enhanced what I can offer to my current client base.
I love that. I love everything you said. I also became a sex therapist further on in my career. And when I went to Michigan and sat in that first class with all of my classmates, I just felt like this middle-aged white lady that was square and like knew nothing compared to all these other people in the room that were so much more aware and so much more progressive. So it gave me the confidence going through that program, not just my own sexual confidence. I mean, it helped me to be a much healthier sexual person and have much better sexual communications with my partner. But it then also helped me to be able to talk about sex with clients in a way that validated them, that educated them when they needed to learn, like what's normal, what's not. I mean, I hate to use the word normal, but a lot of people think everybody's having way more sex than they are. And when they learn the numbers, they realize, oh, well, maybe I am doing okay. So I love the education part of it. I love that sex impacts relationships in such a deep way. And it's a way of loving your partner that you can't get that type of connection in anything else that you do with your partner. It's just different. You know, you love your partner, but sex is just a different connection that you have with your partner. And you need to be able to talk about it. And if you can't talk outside of the bedroom, you're not going to be able to talk in the bedroom about your sexual challenges or problems or even your wants and needs sexual. So as I started to work with couples, I realized I don't know enough about how to talk about sex, how to help people with sex. And anytime you do couples work, I mean, sex, you need to ask about sex. You got to talk about sex. You really do. And a lot of therapists, they don't ask because they don't know how to ask and they're afraid. Heck, a lot of doctors don't even ask their patients about their sex lives because they're just like us. They're people too, and they're not trained to do all of this. I think becoming a sex therapist just made me a better therapist. It made me a better human in general. And it opened my eyes to a lot more of social justice issues.
Yes. And it helps you to become an advocate too for your clients as far as like when you're talking to doctors and how do you explain something to your physician? Because, you know, a lot of times when someone comes to you with some type of sexual dysfunction or anything that's going on with them sexually, you know, the first thing we have to do is say, hey, when's the last time you went to the doctor? What's your diet look like? What's, you know, what are you eating? How are you sleeping? You know, we ask those questions because they're important. What's your stress level like? Right. So because all of those things affect us and everything that affects you affects your sex life.
Exactly. If you're listening to this today, and intercourse really isn't your jam, but you still want to have some really pleasurable and connecting sex, I would encourage you to use sex toys. And if you need a little help with that, I have a course on my website that is all about how to use sex toys. It's all of the information that I wish I had known when I was first starting out on my sex toy journey, or even after I'd been using sex toys for a little while. I show people, well, actually I explain how to use sex toys individually and with a partner and give you lots of examples of really great sex toys. You can also look at my website, Love-Filled Life, for some recommended sex toys. So on the website, lovefilledlife.com, you will find both the course and some recommended sex toys. Enjoy! And back to the show. Let's correct a couple myths about sex therapy. So one myth that people have is that we are all just a bunch of oversexed people. We sex therapists, that we're having sex all the time and that we are like super kinky and like we are into everything.
No.
And that's a myth. That's a myth. That's why I'm bringing that up. That's a myth.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely not. I mean, I'm sure that there are people who, because, you know, sex therapists, we are a gamut of folks. So I'm sure you got some kinky folks out there and you got some folks who are off the chain. However, that is not your sex therapist's goal to get you to be like them.
Right.
The goal is to get you to figure out what's going on with you, what's going on in your relationships, and how you can improve it, how you can change something, or how you don't change something. And it's all about, you know, many of us are really educators because for the first time, I think, when we start talking about sex therapy with our clients and we're just like, even if the smallest thing as a massage is to incorporate massage into your intimate time, or the fact that sex is not just penetrative.
Right. Oh my gosh. Yes.
So just, we are educators. So and we're educators for correctness, right? Like, you know, I'll hear people be like, oh, my private time. I'm like, well, what is that? Explain it to me. What does that mean? Because we don't make assumptions. And I think the beauty of it is that I'm not judging you. You can come and tell me that you're the kinkiest person in the world. And I'm like, okay, how's that helping you over here?
Yeah. And there's a real, permission giving in that too. Like, you know, you have permission to live your life the way you want to live it.
Yeah.
And you know,
and
when
it's,
you,
like I give my clients permission to correct me too. Like if you tell me something and I make an assumption about what you said and I'm wrong, I'm giving you permission to correct me. And how many times do we get that? Right. So,
yeah. Okay, so another myth that people have is, or maybe this is more a misunderstanding, is I think some people think we as sex therapists are actually showing people how to have sex, or we're touching them, or we're, you know, we're actually getting involved in some type of sexual act with our clients. And I know in my state, we definitely don't do that.
Absolutely not. That's not on the state exam. Nor is it ethically, is not part of the ethics that we sign up for. In no way am I touching anybody other than the person I'd be touching.
Right. And now I think in some states, like I think in California, mm-hmm. you can be something. I don't know what it's called.
Oh, if that's
it's
a sex different, but coach. That's a different specialty. There are some sex therapists out there who are licensed in how to help people do certain things. And that may be for a certain community of folks, right? Like for if you're in a disabled community, I may have to help, you know, someone who has as a quadriplegic, their aid may have to help them get in position to do certain things. I'm not certified for that. There's somebody who may be certified to assist.
Right. Did you ever see the show Sex, Love, and Goop?
Yes.
So I think that show made a lot of people think we get naked in front of our clients. We touch them. We teach them how to have an orgasm in front of us and all those kinds of things. But that's not what we do in our therapy office. We talk.
But that's the problem too, right? In the fact that, you know, when people are resistant to talking about sex, it's because, oh, they think it's something like that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, it's going to automatically turn in and we're going to get naked and do something.
Exactly.
Absolutely not. You know,
because that would be scarier than heck to think I'm going to go to this sex therapist and they're going to shove their fingers up me so I can learn how to have an orgasm. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. I would be absolutely terrified if that's something that would happen. But I mean, I can understand why people would think that, but hopefully we're dispelling that myth today.
Yeah. Which is why I wanted to ask that question. Now we talk about sex, we may show diagrams. I have taught clients verbally how to have oral sex when they don't know what to do. You know, I've right. given them resources to try to learn. I've shown them little models that show them what the clitoris looks like and what parts you need to touch and how all the nerves are connected in your pelvic region.
Right.
Yeah. But that's so different from getting naked.
It's about education. Mm-hmm. And you know, when you're in the classroom, you're in the classroom. And so if they look at sex therapy as this is part of being in a classroom, that's what we do.
Well, thank you for walking through that, the differences between therapy and sex therapy, because I think there is a big difference. And I think mm-hmm. many people are scared of therapy or of sex therapy. And I really appreciate you being willing to kind of talk about it from your experience.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So let's roll into the last part. And that is self-care, because I really do admire how well you take care of yourself and make that a priority in your life. I've learned to do that as I've gotten older, because mm-hmm. I can't do what I did when I was younger.
Right.
But, you know, I burn out when I try to do all those things and don't, you know, fill my own gas tank.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. So it has taken me many years to learn that rest is okay.
Mm.
And rest is not a bad word.
Okay, we could do an entire episode on that one. Because
absolutely.
Many of us feel we have to be productive in order to be valuable.
Right.
And but yep, rest is so important.
Rest is very important. And it's still something I'm working on because I do, like, if I'm sitting, I'm not sitting. I'm sitting, I'm knitting, I'm reading, or, you know, that's just who I am. But for me, relaxing with a glass of wine and a good book, that's like nirvana, right? There are days when it's just an overwhelming day. And I may need to just decompress. And I give myself permission to have that moment, have my glass of wine, read a couple chapters of a book, and then take myself to bed. I just believe that I am not fully me if I'm not able to do those things. And the workout part is just the working out. It's to keep me busy. It's to keep me active, keep me doing, you know, because I do want to live a pretty long life if I can. Well, and as long as my body is able to, let me do what I can. Because there's going to come a day when it's not able to do all those things.
Mm. But does the working out feel good to you too?
Not when I start. It takes a lot for me to get out that bed some days and go to the pool. I'm telling you, I'm not going to lie. But once it's done, I mean, I feel amazing. I feel like alive. I feel like my whole day is going to be great. I just feel much better after I exercise. And I do encourage many of my clients to at least get some walking in, get that oxygen in, to do something. So I do believe that it also helps us not to focus so much on the negative things in our lives. So if I'm going to swim and I'm hurting, I'm focusing on my pain. I ain't focusing on life outside of being in the pool or going on a run. I'm focusing on what's going on in that moment with me. And it's all about me in that time period. So.
Well, and being present like that that's a skill, you know, to do that. And we don't have a lot of other opportunities in our life where we really are present because we're so distracted with all the things we have to do in our life and get done. And our thoughts are all over the place. So when you can actually just be present, it is very relaxing.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially when you can take a minute to focus on yourself. And I always encourage folks to, you know, 15, 20 minutes, just be selfish. And out of a 24-hour day, that's nothing. You know, so do something that's just selfishly for you, not for anybody else, just for you.
I love that. Oh, well, I think we did it, Bev. I think we got through all the things today, and it was just wonderful to have this conversation with you.
Oh, I totally appreciate you, Heather.
Well, I appreciate you. Thanks so much for being a guest. And in the show notes, we'll include ways for people to get in touch with you. All right. Well, thanks so much, Bev. I wish you a fabulous rest of your day, and go do some self-care. Right. I'm going to go do that.
Maybe a glass of wine.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks for joining me for today's episode. If you found this episode valuable, please subscribe, share the podcast with a friend that might enjoy it, and leave a positive review. And if you have time, I'd really appreciate your thoughts on what topics you'd like to see more of this year. You can do that through the link in the show notes. Until next time, my wish for you is to create fabulous relationships and live your best life and feel empowered to have the type of sex life you really want.